So Baruch Shachianu v'kimanu v'gyanu l'azman hazeh. We'll call it a new zman, charisman. It should be a good zman of Aliyah and Torah, near Shemayim. And we, Be'ezus Hashem, will be zocha to learn machshava today. And I thought for this week, maybe next week also, we'll see. But we'll start with a little bit of Parsha-related topics. And I want to talk about two topics today, both related to Parshas Bereishis. The topics are unrelated, but we're going to see that they're linked in a very important way. So hopefully they will shed light on each other. The first topic we're going to discuss is the topic of the meaning of the Eitz Hadas Tov V'Ra. And the second topic we're going to discuss is how to read the story of Bereishis, and specifically how to deal with questions relating to science, for example, the age of the universe and the like. These are both very broad topics. We're not going to fully study them entirely, both in one day, but I thought today at least it would be worthwhile to begin with Hakdama. So the first topic actually relates to what we're talking about on the previous two shiurim, and that is the topic of free will. Free will is very much at the heart of the story of the Eitz Hadas Tov V'Ra. And the question I think that we wonder a lot about is the following. Was man created with free will? If he was, so what exactly changed after he ate from the Eitz Hadas Tov V'Ra? And if he wasn't, so how was he chote with the Eitz Hadas Tov V'Ra? We talked about before Yom Kippur how free will is really very fundamental to our mission in life. The entire Torah is predicated on free will. In fact, the Ramban implies, in a certain sense, there'd almost be no purpose of creation if we didn't have free will, because what's accomplished if HaKadosh Baruch Hu were to create a bunch of robots that weren't freely choosing? But at the same time, it sounds like there's some type of a transition, something that changed between before and after we ate from the Eitz Hadas. And the question is, what exactly is it that changed? And we're going to focus on the perspectives of the Ramban first and then the Rambam. They're somewhat similar, but there are also some important differences, and then we will consider the implications of their positions. We'll start though with Rashi, the first source on your sheet. Rashi writes, V'lo yispo shashu, so human beings were originally not ashamed of their nakedness. Rashi explains why. They didn't comprehend the ways of modesty to distinguish between Tov and Ra. In other words, man was originally created with Dea, with wisdom. After all, he gave names to all the animals, as the Psukim explain. And Chazal tell us that means that man was able to understand the essence of animals. When he called that a para and that an aryeh, it wasn't just a random name, but it reflected a understanding of the essence of the animal. Agav, some of you are learning Yerideya this year, so that relates perhaps to a number of sugyas in Yerideya, like Aslinan Basar Shma, the concept of whether the shame is best at capturing the essence of something, but that's a different topic. So Adam was endowed with Dea, Rashi says, but Lo Nitan Bo Yetzer Hara Ad Achlo Min Ha'etz V'Nichnas Bo Yetzer Hara V'Yada Ma Bein Tov L'Ra. So initially, we didn't have a Yetzer Hara, and therefore, there was no busha in nakedness. And after we ate from that eight, so nichnas banu yetzer hara. So it's interesting. Apparently, we were able to be chote without the yetzer hara. Perhaps we'll return to this point later. Rashi says nichnas bo yetzer hara. There was a yetzer hara, but it wasn't inside of us. What would that mean? So either way, Rashi tells us that we didn't have a yetzer hara inside of us prior to the chet. But at the same time, it would seem that somehow or another we were able to make that wrong choice, even without that yetzer hara within us. So how does that work exactly? So let's turn to the Ramban. And the Ramban's comments here are really very, very fascinating. We'll read them together and try to understand them, v'siyata d'shmaya. So in this piece, the next source of Eitz Hadas Tov Hara, he quotes other interpretations before this. And now we'll turn to where he says, v'hayafa be'enai, where he presents his position. V'hayafa be'enai, the correct interpretation, ki ha'adam haya'osa b'tiv'o ma'asheroi lasos kefi ha'tolades. Initially, man naturally did that which was right. Doing that which is right was natural. In other words, he had the ability to do that which is wrong, but it wasn't the natural choice. And the Ramban, over the course of this piece, is going to give us a number of analogies. And we're going to look carefully at these analogies, because in these analogies, we'll hopefully understand what he was originally and what he became. Analogies for what it was like to what man was like prior to the Eitz Hadas and then following. So there's the first analogy. Kasher yasu ha-shamayim v'chol tzva'am. Man originally did that which was right naturally, just like Shamayim does that which is right naturally. Po'alei emes shepulasam emes v'lo yishanu es tafkidam. Ve'en lohem b'maseim ahava o sinah. So he compares man in his initial state to the celestial bodies, to the sun and the moon, who naturally do what they're supposed to do without any inner conflict or tension. Ramban may have understood that the sun and the moon were, at least in this mashal, were capable of higher thought. Even though they lacked free will, they weren't just inanimate objects. The Rambam certainly holds that. The Ramban, to a large degree, disagrees. It relates to where Shamayim is. We're not going to get into that now. But the point is that just like, let's say, the sun does what it's supposed to do, it does its job every day, there's no inner tension. That is the way man operated originally. Now, does that mean he had no free will? So we'll see from the continuation of the Ramban that's not the case. And in a sense, it's obvious, because otherwise he couldn't have chosen to eat from the tree of knowledge. But so this presumably is an imperfect analogy, and we'll see. He gives further analogies in a moment. Before reading on, it's worthwhile to focus on the end of that sentence. Of the ein lahem b'maaseihem ahava o sinah. So they lack love and hatred. The Ramban is basically going to say, to jump ahead, that man originally was created without ratzon. He might have had bechira, the Ramban says, but he lacked ratzon. Ratzon connotes both will, desire. Here Ramban associates it with emotion, love, and hatred. So originally we were like these celestial bodies, faithful workers, do that which is right. We were incapable of emotions. Now what changed? So let's read on. Upriya ha'ilan hazeh, hayamalida ratzon v'chefet shiyivchru ochlav, bedavar o behipucho letov o lira. So eating from the tree gave rise to will and desire, to chefetz and ratzon, that a person who would eat from it could choose a thing or its opposite, letov o lera. So before we read on, just take a look at the next source from the Ramban in Dvarim, Perek Lamed. Here the Ramban is discussing what is going to change in the Messianic era. The Pasuk says, Umal Hashem alokachas levavcha, which indicates that there's going to be some change. And the Ramban understands that to some degree that was a restoration of our original state. The mila of the Orla Salev, such that now it becomes natural to love and fear God, is a return to the way things were. And we'll return to that more in a moment. But I just want to focus on one line here, which makes clear that we did have Bechira originally. The Ramban writes, Ki mizman ha-briya ha-isa ha-rishus bi-ad ha-adam la-asos kirtzono tzadik o-rash. From the time of Bria, meaning, say, even prior to man's eating the Eitz Hadas Tovara, a person had the freedom to do as they wish, to be a tzaddik or a rasha. The Ramban, though, interestingly enough, contrasts that with Yemos HaMashiach, where we're naturally going to do what we want to do. We're not going to desire that which is bad for us. And the Ramban quotes Chazal that refers to Yemos HaMashiach as Yamim She'en Bahem Chefetz, days where there is no desire. And the Ramban thinks, in fact, that being the case, there's not going to really be schar for our decisions, b'mos HaMashiach. Whether that means that there's no bechira at all or not is a very important question. Maybe one time we could have a shir on b'mos HaMashiach, and we'll talk about the Ramban's view on that. For now, though, I just want to focus on that line where he says, ki mizman habriya, Haisa Rishus Biad Adam Laso Sadik for Rasha. So what Ramban is saying is that originally we might have had Bechira, but we didn't have Ratzon. So what does that mean? So the Ramban, well, we'll see in a moment, gives a example of that, which is that a person naturally wanted to do that which is healthy. Nowadays, I won't ask everyone what you guys ate for breakfast, but I imagine that perhaps some of you didn't eat plain Cheerios. You know, let's imagine somebody ate, we won't even say Fruity Pebbles, let's say Honey Nut Cheerios, right? So now Honey Nut Cheerios are certainly not as healthy for us as plain Cheerios. So why would we eat them? Well, because they taste good. In other words, what does that mean? So what? They taste good, but they're bad for us. Well, we desire that which tastes good. So now, in our current state of affairs, we desire that which is bad for us. We don't naturally only desire that which is good. And that is a result of the kilkel that came from the consumption of the Eitz Hadas Tovara. The Ramban says the same thing is true with respect to Tashma Shamita. In the original state, a person would engage in that in a purely functional way to reproduce. Now, there is the association with pleasure. And that is what creates in a person the desire to do something and its opposite. And this is really at the heart of the discussion that we had prior to Yom Kippur about tshuva and the source of our chataim. Meaning to say, we really do desire something and its opposite simultaneously. We want to be healthy and we also want to have sweet foods. And that confusion within us, what Rashi refers to as the Yetzer Hara, is a result of the chet. Now, within us, we desire something and its opposite. We want to be healthy. We want to enjoy our food. We're aware of the downsides of eating sweet foods. They're likely to make us sick. They might upset our stomach. They might give us a toothache. And yet we may desire them. We do desire them, and we may choose to eat them. So let's take a look again at the Ramban. V'lachei nikra etz hadas tovara. Ki hadas yomar bil shonenu al haratzon. Ramban says that we shouldn't translate the word das here as knowledge. We often translate the word as the tree of knowledge of good and evil. That's an incorrect translation. Das, in this case, refers to ratzon. And the Ramban now is going to show us that both in Lashon Chazal and in Lashon of Tanakh, you see that the word das has this meaning. So first, in Lashon Chazal, kilshonam, lo shanu ela shedaito lachzor. Daito lachzor doesn't mean he has knowledge to return. It means he intends to. He wants to return. V'shedaito lifnoso. His intention is to clear it out. He has ratzon to be mefane it. And likewise, in Lashon HaKasov, ma adam v'teda'ehu. Who is man that I know him? Is that what the pasuk means, that God knows us? No, it means that I distinguish him, that I show ratzon towards man. In other words, the pasuk saying, what is so special about man that God has special chefetz or ratzon to man? It means tachbots v'tirtzebo. Likewise, yidaticha b'shem. I distinguished you. I had ratzon. I have chefetz for you. It doesn't mean, oh, I knew you by name. Okay, God knows everybody by name. What was special about Bezalel? He had this ratzon. It means becharticha mikol adam. And here is, in a sense, the strongest raya to this understanding of the pasuk. It's the Ma'amar Barzilai. Remember the story of Barzilai. After Avshalom's insurrection, David HaMelech wanted to help those who supported him, including Barzilai. So he tells him, you know, what could I do for you? How could I help you? And what does the Barzilai respond? V'chei Ma'amar Barzilai, ha'eda bein tov l'ra. Now this particular pasuk is so telling because it's the same phrase, ladas tov l'ra, ha'eda bein tov l'ra. I put the pasuk here below in its entirety, so you could see it. What does the pasuk say? Ben shmonim shana anochi hayom. I'm an old man. Ha'ida ben tov l'ra. Im yit'am avdecha es asher ochal ve'es asher eshte. Im eshma od bekol shamim v'sharos. In other words, what's he telling David? Look, I'm not going to enjoy anything you give me. Do I taste what I eat anyway? Do I enjoy beautiful song any longer? I don't appreciate that. Those things. Those things that you could give me are meaningless to me. I'm no longer yodea tovara. So what does this pasuk mean? So what the pasuk is telling us is that yodea ben tov lara is associated with pleasure, like enjoying the taste of food or good music or the like. In fact, Ibn Ezra understands, based off of this pasuk, that yedias tovara is associated with sexual desire. He says that's why after they ate from the tree, they covered their private parts. Ramban says that's partially right, but that's too narrow. It's not just sexual pleasure, but it relates to ratzon in general, as we've seen. And one way in which this is obviously clear, the Ramban says, is because what does the pasuk say? The pasuk says that you will be ve'yisem kelokim yodea tovara. In other words, that doesn't mean that yodea tovara, if it was simply associated with sexual desire, so then that wouldn't be a godly trait. So, but ratzon is a godly trait. In what sense is ratzon a godly trait? God's creation of the world is, in a sense, the greatest manifestation of ratzon. There was no world, And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu had Ratzon, expressed Ratzon, and he created a world. The whole concept of Bria Yesh Me'ayin is rooted in the notion of Ratzon. The Ramban emphasizes that the falsehood of the Aristotelian conception of God and the Aristotelian conception of the universe is that in Aristotle's perspective, God is devoid of Ratzon. And therefore, by definition, the universe is eternal. The whole concept of creation is rooted in Ratzon. And so is the concept of Bechiras Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's relationship with us. And the concept of Torah and all of that is rooted in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's having Ratzon. Man was initially created without Ratzon. And that is what changed when he ate from the Eitz Hadas. So let's take a look. The Ramban continues. And he depicts what would life be like without Ratzon. V'hine Be'is HaZos Lo Haya Ben Adam Ve'ishto HaMishkal L'Taifa. At this point, prior to the consumption of the Eitz Hadas, Mishkal, sexual activity, had no association with Taiva, with desire. Aval Be'is HaHolada Yischabru V'Yolidu. At a time of Holada, meaning to say at a time when it was appropriate to beget offspring. It's interesting. Most animals and mammals will, the female will only be mekabel a zachar when it's shayach for her to become pregnant. As opposed to in humans. Humans can have chibor all the time. They desire chibor all the time, even though it's only a relatively small window of time around the time when a woman ovulates that she could become pregnant. That is a result of the transformation that took place due to the consumption of the Eitz Hadas Tovara. Mishgal went from something being functional, in which case it only made sense during a very limited window, to something that was now associated with Ratzon, Chefetz, and Taiva. There was no difference between the sexual organs and the hands and the feet and the face. They were the same. There was no bush associated with them because they were purely functional. So then what changed? So let's take a look at how the Ramban describes the transformation. Now we had Bechira. Now again, this line on its own almost sounds like he didn't have Bechira originally, but we saw from the Ramban and the Savim that that's not true. And moreover, it's also, in a sense, obviously not true, because again, otherwise, how could he have chosen to eat? So what changed? Now we had the Ratzon to do bad or to do good, both to himself and to others. The whole concept of love, as we saw before, of doing kindness, likewise, hatred, harm to others, and even to yourself, stems from Ratzon. And then the Ramban says something fascinating. Vizu midas, mida Elohis mitzad achad. On the one hand, this is a godlike attribute, as we said before. God created the world as a manifestation of Ratzon. But of course, it's also bad. Now he has Yetzer. Now he has a Taiva. So I should point out, even though I'm arguing that he did have Bechira originally, there are some thinkers who read the Ramban as saying he didn't have Bechira originally, among them Rav Yitzchak Arama and the Akedas Yitzchak. And obviously, he gets it from this line where he says, again, I find that approach difficult in light of A, Svara, B, the passage from Dvarim that we saw before. And moreover, because until this point, the Ramban has been focusing entirely on Ratzon and Bechira. And I think not ratzon and chayfetz. And here I think when he says bechira, he doesn't mean it in the, he means it more in a colloquial sense, meaning to say the chayfetz to do davar v'hipucho, as he said. So let's try to understand this a little better. Most of our chataim are, maybe all, but let's say most, are rooted in some sort of desire, some sort of chayfetz. We talked about this when we discussed tshuva, why tshuva is possible based off of this, that most of the time when we do something wrong, it's not that we choose a path of evil, but we're overcome by desire. Desire is at the root of envy and kavod, and not just physical pleasures. It's the root even of something like avodah zarah, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin on Samach Gimel Amud Beis. So the way we experience Bechira is certainly very different than the way Adam might have experienced Bechira, because our Bechira is rooted in our Ratzon, in our Taiva. But that doesn't mean to say that he didn't have some level of Bechira in a different sense. So let's elaborate. The Ramban, as we saw, says that the manifestation of man's lack of ratzon was that, or I should say, the manifestation of his newly found ratzon was birtzono lahara leitev bein lo bein lacherem. Beforehand, he couldn't love. He couldn't give. So again, it's much broader than just sensual desire. It's the concept of giving. Now why is it that lehetiv is something that's shayach to ratzon? So I think the answer is because if a person lacks ratzon, so they can't see a chisaron in someone else. The concept of lacking is something foreign. Certainly, you know, if I'm hungry, I'm tired, it's okay. So that's the way it is, you know. There's no need to, a person just does what they're supposed to do. Certainly, concepts like sadness and disappointment are concepts that make no sense to someone who lacks ratzon. So therefore, the concept of being native, where you see somebody else's chisronos and you try to correct them, that's something that's not shayach without ratzon. Certainly things like emotion, because if you just do what makes sense, so then what value is there to emotion? Now, this, of course, raises a very interesting issue, which is, well, what would have motivated Adam to eat from the Eitz Hadas if it wasn't pleasure? What was he looking for? So according to Ramban, I think the answer is explicit in the text, that he wished to be godlike. Now, it's important to clarify, wanting to be godlike is not the same thing as wanting to be God. Rashi actually addresses that question, and he says that's also part of it. But let's first focus on Ramban. So what does it mean? So man initially was limited in his ability to do good, like we saw, or evil. He couldn't love or hate. He couldn't be mative. So the snake entices Adam to eat from the tree with the promise that if you do so, so then you're going to share a certain quality with God. You're going to gain ratzon. Again, not to say that God has ratzon in the same sense that we got it, but there's a certain commonality there. Eating from the Eitz Hadas allows man to serve God from a position of ratzon. And that's what enticed Adam. So the snake entices man with this tantalizing possibility to be godlike, to choose good over evil from a perspective of ratzon. And the truth is that there was some merit to this argument. If you take a look at the Ramban, for example, at the Rabbeinu Bachya that you have here below, who adopts the approach of the Ramban, he writes, Zu midas midalokis midat tova mitzad achad v'ra'a mitzad acher. Having this ability, this ratzon, is not just godlike, but it's positive. There's a positive side to ratzon. Seeing two reasonable options and being able to choose is a remarkable opportunity. Sometimes it stems from blindness and we hurt ourselves. But the point is that consuming from this tree gave us this opportunity. But we also stepped down. Clarity was replaced with ambiguity. Now, I think it's important to consider that the problem here was largely because he contravened God's divine commandment. Hashem said, don't eat from it, and he did. It may very well be that at the right time and in the right place, it would have been appropriate for Adam to eat from the Eitz Hadas Tov Ara. It seems reasonable that God didn't just create it to tempt man, but that it served a purpose. And there was a time when it would have been right. That time hadn't arrived yet. So now we still perhaps have a technical question. Okay, but so what would have tempted him then to contravene God's directive? Rabbeinu Bachya says that that's because the snake, which was an external agent, convinced Chava, who then convinced Adam to partake in the fruit. Man wouldn't have originally thought of the idea because he lacked ratzon, but he could be convinced by the snake's argument. Some thinkers argue that that even without that, just the concept that he could serve God in an elevated state through the consumption of the fruit would have in and of itself inspired man to do this. One way or the other, the point that we're coming to here is, and this really helps us understand what Chazal mean when they talk about the Yetzer Hara, it stems from the concept of ratzon. Ratzon is responsible for that inner tension within us, for desiring davar v'hipucho. If you look at the Nefesh Chaim, so he talks about how after the consumption of the fruit, so what happened is that we have within us this tension. And almost no act is entirely pure because within us we have the Eitz Hadas Tov Ara. A person may choose to do the right thing, but most of the time there is an aspect of impurity in that act. Perhaps we give tzedakah, but we're hoping that somebody will notice. And likewise, when we choose to do the wrong thing, most of the time, it's not purely evil and malicious. We're always, when we make low-level choices, we're always convincing ourselves that there's some type of benefit or good thing in that act. And there is. It doesn't make it right. It's because we have within us that desire, lasos davar v'hipucho, that we have that tension. And according to Ramban, as we saw, that is what's going to change, b'mos ha-mashiach u'mal Hashem Elokecha es levavcha v'es levazarecha. Now again, what that means, does that mean we have no bechira b'mos ha-mashiach, is a very important question. And I'd add to that, if we are restored to that state, how do we know we won't mess up again like we did the first time, B'mos Mashiach? I think we won't address that topic now. Maybe we'll get back to that. Yes, Mordechai, you have a question.
Yeah, the wanting or desire to become like Hashem, is that not a manifestation of Ratzon?
So that's a question that the Rabbeinu Bachya is trying to address. His answer is that because it would not have emerged naturally, in other words, he didn't have Ratzon within him. That was the snake who made the argument, and that argument, though it wouldn't have emerged organically, could be a convincing argument, even in the initial state, because he was telling him you could be Oved Hashem from a better place. That's Rabbeinu Bachya's solution is to that problem. In other words, that it was external and it became internal. But it made sense because it wasn't just, it wasn't chait in for the sake of pleasure. It was chait for the looking to serve God in a way that he couldn't in his current state. I think that's what Rabbeinu Bachya is saying. Yes, Asher.
Hi. So we've been talking about in terms of all of this Ratzon coming from internal, and it's all a perspective of us looking around the world and seeing what the good and bad is in that way. Is there anything intrinsically valuable to, let's say, the external, you know, is there an attraction that it's there? Like the fact that the apple is red, is that something that is intrinsically valuable, or it's all a perspective from the inner world?
I'm not sure I understand.
Meaning if all of this is a, like in terms of our, you know, our chafetz, our ratzon to do things, is there anything intrinsically valuable to the thing that is attracting us to do something or not? Is it like all just from within, or is there some value from without? Meaning like, you said that the ratzon came from external in terms of the nachash, but what about like there being any intrinsic value to the world around us?
Well, that's an interesting question. The Ramban actually discusses that as well in our parsha, and not in this context, but he talks about how all of the things that were in Gan Eden reflect deeper things. Everything was symbolic, including things like, in your example, let's say that the redness of the apple or the like, and Adam was able to understand that. And so that was what was so incredible about being in Gan Eden. There was this connection between even like you said, the physical characteristics of an object and what it represented and what it was and the like. So I think the answer is yes, though that's not something we necessarily perceive nowadays. Is there another question?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead, Gabe.
I'm just wondering, what exactly was the point of having Bechira without Ratzon?
I think,
like what does it even mean to have Bechira without Ratzon?
Well, we could look at it backwards. At the very least, it means that it's what allowed for Adam to eat from the Eitz Hadas Tov Hara, which set up the stage that we are in now, and one which we will, according to Ramban, eventually go back to, which is the lack of Ratzon. But I would add something here that the Baalei Mussar stress, and I gave, we're not going to read it inside now, but on your sheets you could see some of it, which is that even in our current state, a person can strive to limit their freedom or their ratzon, the idea of being Moshel Berucho, which is the lashon of the pasuk in Mishlei, is an idea that we should control our ratzon. We should limit our ratzon. So it's not like that concept is totally foreign to us at present. We, at one point, experienced a type of existence without Ratzon. And according to the Ramban, we're going to once again return to that state because it does relate to a higher state. And even nowadays, we can, to the best of our ability, should be Moshe Berucho. So I think that even in our current state, that's something that we could strive toward and be shayach to. And that's an idea that, as you, if you take a look at some of the sources over here, that the Balei Musar gain from this. Yes.
Just a quick follow-up. Also, really, just a follow-up to the previous question. Mm-hmm. So the idea of not having Ratzon doesn't mean that you cannot desire things. It just means that you can desire them on your own. Right? If a snake convinces you of something, then you can desire something.
Mm-hmm. That might be what the what Rabbeinu Bach is saying.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, so I'd like to turn now to the approach of the Rambam. And the Rambam is going to take a similar approach to the Ramban, but we'll see some important differences. Before we get to how the Rambam understands the Eitz Hadas Tov V'Ra, which is discussed in the Mor Nevuchim at the beginning. Well, let's take a look at how the Ramban in Hilchos Tshuva, halacha I think we might have seen last time, understands the pasuk from Perek Gimel, pasuk Chaf Beis. The pasuk says, "Vayomer Hashem Elokim, hein Adam haya kechad mimenu ladas tov v'ra, ve'ata pen yishlach siyado v'lakach gam meitz hachayim v'achal v'chay liolam." So what is the meaning of that pasuk? So if you take a look at the next source, which is in Hilchos Tshuva Perkei Halacha Aleph, the Rambam writes, Rishus l'chol adam nesuna im lahatos atzmo l'derach tova v'lios tzadik harishus biyado v'imratza lahatos atzmo l'derach raha v'lios rasha rishus biyado. We each have the choice to turn and be a tzaddik or a rasha. Hu shekasuv b'Torah. This is the meaning of the pasuk that we just read. Hein ha'adam haya kechad mimenu, ladas tovara. Kelomar, hein min ze shel adam haya yachid ba'olam. Man is unique. That's what kechad mimenu means. Ve'ein min sheni domelo, v'ze ha'inyan. So yodea tov v'ra means, and I think we read this and made this point last time, first and foremost, the ability to know that which is right and that which is wrong, to distinguish between good and evil, and secondly, to do kol ma'ashu chafetz. V'ein mi shi'akev b'yado milasos hatov o hara. In other words, this pasuk is highlighting two essential aspects of free will. Number one is the ability to know that which is right or wrong. The ability to choose without the ability to know is meaningless because there's no meaning to that choice. And second of all, besides the fact that man has the ability to know that which is right and wrong, man also has the ability to choose. And thus the pasuk continues, v'kev and shekain, who pen yishlach yado, and that's the continuation of the pasuk that man had to be expelled from Gan Eden lest he consume the Eitz HaChayim. We will see in just a moment that in the Mor Nevuchim he actually understands this pasuk a little differently, though the conclusions are the same. So what does he say, Mor Nevuchim? So over here we got a story. We don't have that many stories in Mor Nevuchim, but here we have a story about a person that once came to the Rambam and raised the following challenge. He said, you know, your Torah is something that supports stupidity. Why? Well, because what's the greatest gift that man has? Knowledge. And yet, according to your Torah, man was punished with knowledge when he disobeyed God. Because the Eitz Hadas Tov Hara, Yediyah, he got knowledge. In other words, knowledge is something that's seen as negative, as a punishment. So let's see what the Rambam answers. Just read a little bit from the Maor Nevuchim. Years ago, a learned man propounded as a challenge to me a curious objection. This is what the objector said. It is manifest from the clear sense of the biblical text that the primary purpose with regard to man was that he should be, as the other animals are, devoid of intellect or thought or the capacity to distinguish between good and evil. When he disobeyed, however, this disobedience procured him as its necessary consequence the great perfection peculiar to man. Now, it is a thing to be wondered that man's punishment for his disobedience would consist in his being granted perfection that he did not possess before, namely the intellect. And this is particularly problematic because the Rambam actually had discussed in the previous chapter the idea of Tzelem Elokim. What does Tzelem Elokim mean? The Rambam in those early chapters of Maor Nevuchim talk about the meaning of words. What does Tzelem Elokim mean? He's particularly interested in the question of anthropomorphisms. But without going into the details, Tzelem Elokim, according to the Rambam, is associated with the intellect. Man was created with the Tzelem Elokim, meaning with the intellect. So if that's true, so man was originally created with the intellect. So what then does the pasuk mean that he was rewarded or punished with yediyas tov hara? That's the question that Rambam is dealing with here. And in answering this question, the Rambam distinguishes between tov hara versus emes v'sheker. Tov hara is something that man only acquired after sin, whereas emes v'sheker, truth and falsehood, were something that man possessed initially. What's the difference? Emes v'sheker reflect objective reality. They stem from the intellect, as opposed to tov hara, which relate to conception. For example, the Rambam states, a person, if I were, I would say it's true that the world is spherical. You wouldn't say it's tov, that it's spherical. On the other hand, you might say that a particular dress looks good. It's tov. You wouldn't say it's emes. And that's because something like clothing and what they look like reflect conventions. There's nothing emes about style. And the Rambam writes that the shame of nakedness is the ultimate convention. There is nothing objectively problematic about being undressed. And accordingly, that shame didn't exist in the pre-sin world. Let's take a look at what he says. Through the intellect, one distinguishes between emes and sheker. And that was found in Adam in its perfection and integrity. Tov hara, on the other hand, belonged to the category of things generally accepted as known. We've been calling that convention. The word that the Rambam uses, at least in the Hebrew translation, is nefursamos. And we're going to try to define that word more carefully in a moment. As opposed to things that are cognized by the intellect, which is what the Rambam calls muskalos. So emes v'sheker relates to muskalos, like seichel. Tov hara reflects nefursamos, like mefursam, or convention. For one does not say it is tov, that the heaven is spherical, and it is ra, that the earth is flat. Rather, one says it is true and false. Accordingly, when man was in his most perfect and excellent state, in accordance with his inborn disposition and possessed of his intellectual cognitions, because of which it is said of him that atichasreu me'at meluhim, he had no faculty that was engaged in any way in the consideration of mefursamos, generally accepted things, and he did not apprehend them. And then the Rambam adds, with regard to what is of necessity, there is no good and evil, but only emes and sheker. And this is similar to what we saw in the Ramban. From the perspective of the intellect, you eat in order to live. The foods you choose will be that which are most effective in facilitating life. Qualities like taste and appearance are irrelevant. So how did Adam and Chava come to eat from the Eitz Hadas? So let's take a look at what the Pasuk says, and the Rambam here has a very fascinating insight. So the Pasuk, you have it below, says, Vatera ha'isha, ki tov ha'etz l'ma'achal, v'chisa'avahu li'einayim, v'nechmad ha'etz l'askil, v'tikach mepriyo v'sochal, v'titin gam li'isha ima v'yohal. So the woman, she saw it was tov, ta'ava, nechmad. The Pasuk implies that, the way the Rambam understands it, that once they began looking at the tree in a non-intellectual fashion, then eating from the tree naturally followed. Then they began to look at the world from this perspective of tov v'ra and not emes and sheker. It's very interesting. The root of the chet wasn't their eating, but the way they looked at the world. Let's take a look at how the Rambam puts it. However, when he disobeyed and inclined toward his desires of the imagination, dimyon, and the pleasures of his corporeal senses, and as much as it is said that the tree was good for food and that it was delight to the eyes, he was punished by being deprived of that intellectual apprehension. He therefore disobeyed the commandment that was imposed upon him on account of his intellect and being endowed with the faculty of apprehending generally accepted things. He became absorbed in judging things to be good or bad. So that was the chait. Not so much the root of the chait wasn't in the eating, but in the perception of the world of tov v'ra. And that's what changed. I remember Rostav once gave a mashal. He said, you know, you're in the middle of afternoon Seder, and you're learning shtark. You're only thinking of the Gemara. It's true, it's been a long time since you ate, but you know, you're in the zone. And then somebody says to you, you know, you want to go get some pizza. So you say, pizza? No, I'm in the middle of afternoon Seder. But once he says pizza, you're no, it's not the same. You start thinking, actually, I'm a little bit hungry. And you start to, that would be nice. That smells good. Even if you don't end up eating the pizza, right? You're out of the zone. That's what happened. They changed their perspective of looking at things. So again, I think also in the Rambam, it's clear that man was created with free will, and what changed is his perception, looking at the world in terms of emes v'sheker versus tov v'ra. Now, I want to better understand this. Is your hand up, Simcha? No. Okay. I want to try to understand what the Rambam means by mefursamos. And I think that we'll see two approaches to this question, which are quite interesting in terms of their implications. So the first approach is that the word mefursamos relates to moral virtue. Support for this position comes from the definition that the Rambam gives to the term in his treatise on logic. This is a work that the Rambam wrote in Arabic. It was translated into Hebrew by Ibn Tibbon. It's called Milos HaHigayon. You could also get it in English. And there, he translates mefursamos as things that have a rational basis than that which is demonstrable, but it might be true nevertheless. In other words, certain things I could prove. There are other things that might be true, they might even be rational, but I can't prove them. So the Rambam writes that this second level is very relevant in terms of determining the propriety or the morality of a particular action. If I wonder, is a certain thing right or wrong? I can't always prove one way or the other, but I could use a certain type of argument which has a rational basis, even though it's not as concrete as a proof. And that's what the Rambam writes about moral virtues, things like moderation, justice, gentleness, humility, contentment, courage. All these things are moral virtues. These relate to the world of Mefursamos. The Rambam says a similar thing in Shmona Prakim when comparing rational virtue and moral virtue. So according to this perspective, Tov Hara means that Adam in his original creation wasn't shaykh to the world of moral virtues. And you could explain that's what the Rambam means when he says that in his initial state of creation, the concept of modesty was foreign to him. The concept that the genitals should be covered was foreign to him. He didn't apprehend that it was bad, but it is. It's just not shayach to the world of emes v'sheker, it's shayach to the world of tov v'ra. That's the first approach to what mefursamos means. Now, there's a big problem with this approach, because if it's correct, then it turns out that the questioner, in a sense, was right. Because by consuming the Eitz Hadas tov v'ra, man was granted access to moral virtues. He was punished by being granted access to a certain way of thinking at things, which is valuable. Now, if you take this approach, I suppose you would respond that the Rambam idealized the cerebral world, the intellect, to such a degree that we would have been, in a sense, better off not apprehending moral virtues. But I think that it's a difficult read, because again, it means essentially that he gains something very positive through sin, which seems to be an idea that the Rambam rejects. So is there another way to define mefursamos? So the other way emerges from looking carefully at the examples that the Rambam gives in this parak that we just read about mefursamos. And they all relate to the aesthetic. The Rambam cites qualities like taste and appearance and his association of tov hara. And these things have no value in the world of emes v'sheker. Moral virtue might have been possible before he consumed from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. But concepts of the sensual are entirely a yerida. It's only in that perspective, like the Rambam says, that nakedness is wrong, because it is associated with the desire, and that is no place in the world of emes v'sheker. And that's what the Rambam means. He says that when they opened up their eyes, they were able to see, right? The Rambam writes, man changed the direction toward which he tended and took as his objective the very thing a previous commandment had bidden him not to aim at. In other words, as we saw before, the tzivoy of HaKadosh Baruch Hu was not to look at the world from a perspective of the aesthetic. And that's where their failure was. This second approach is adopted by the Rav. I'll read to you, it's the next source. This is from, you have it in your source sheets. This is from Worship of the Heart. And you'll see the Rav over here rejects that first approach and adopts the second. Man is both an intellectual and ethical being. In distinguishing between contrasting pairs of emes v'sheker and tov hara, Rambam does not discriminate between theoretical truth and falsity and moral right and wrong. as many historians have erroneously assumed. That was the first Mahalich. Instead, he set up an opposition between the cognitive ethical truth and falsity on the one hand, and propriety and impropriety, which is pleasing or displeasing in an aesthetic sense, on the other hand. Rambam translates the words tova ra in the story of the original fall as meaning the pleasant and unpleasant, the comfortable and uncomfortable, the delightful and ugly. What caused man's fall in his giving preference to the sensuous, delightful, and pleasing over the true, both intellectual and ethical. Now, what's interesting about this piece in the Rav is I would have said, if you read the story as the Rav is reading it, you would say that, okay, so in the ideal world, in the perfect world, there's no place for the aesthetic, for mefursamos. Aesthetic, things like tasty, beautiful, all those only are relevant once we left that world of emes v'sheker, and ideally have no place. What's interesting is that the Rav does not say that either. The Rav writes that the chet was rooted in his overestimating the importance of the pleasing and the beautiful. And the consequence, he says, manifests itself in a false axiological assessment of man's experiences, giving priority to the aesthetic behavior. In other words, the chet was overemphasizing the beauty, the aesthetic. It's not that it's inherently evil. It was a incorrect apportionment of values and priority. Remember, when it comes to moral virtue, the Rambam teaches us in Hilchos Deos that a person has to strive for moderation. The chet here was in the overemphasis of the aesthetic. And this, by the way, might help address what motivated man who was in a state of emes v'sheker to consider tov v'ra. But we don't really have time for that. So I want to conclude with two haros. Number one is something that we also talked about before the Yom Noraim, which is that that part of who we are includes the sensual, the aesthetic. It's okay. The problem is defining ourselves by it. That a person experiences pleasures is one thing. That a person defines himself by those pleasures is something entirely different. And as we talked about earlier, that I think is one of the major problems with the contemporary secular perspective, where a person is defined by those concepts. It's okay to enjoy food. It's mios to be a foodie. That is exactly what the chet was, according to the Rav. It was a overemphasis on the aesthetic, overemphasizing the importance of the pleasing and the beautiful. Much more to say on that, but just two more quick haros. I know we're over time. One haro, which I guess we don't have time now to answer, but it's worth noting, is that the Rambam does read this pasuk differently in Mor Nevuchim and in Mishneh Torah, like we saw. In Mishneh Torah, the pasuk of Hein Haya Adam Ke'achad Mimenu Ladas Tov V'ra meant that man is now unique in his ability to know that which is good and evil, meaning to apprehend, to discern between right and wrong. That's what Ladas Tov V'ra means, that man could figure out what's right and what's wrong. Obviously, in Mor Nevuchim, that's not the way he's reading Ladas Tov V'ra. Tov V'ra refers, it contrasts with emes and sheker and refers to the aesthetic, the sensual, and the like. So that's a hara. Maybe another time we could talk about how to address that type of question. And the second thing I want to just bring up, and this really leads to the second half of today's shiur, which maybe we'll save for tomorrow, next week, but at least to make the point, which is very important, and Rav Soloveitchik points out as well over here, which is that the word tov, according to the Rambam, And especially if you accept his interpretation that Tov means aesthetic and not moral virtue, must have a totally different reading, meaning in chapter 1 versus chapter 3 in Bereishis. This would really be true for either interpretation, but it's especially noteworthy if you take that second approach, the Rav's approach, because what does it say in the first chapter of Bereishis? Vayar Elokim ki tov, Vayar Elokim ki tov. After the whole creation, everything is tov ma'od. Now, what does tov mean? Well, if we use that definition from chapter 3, then tov means what? Aesthetic? Beautiful? That's not what it means. Tov ma'od means the world was beautiful. But the Rambam told us that's not the ideal way to look at the world. We shouldn't view the universe through the lens of tov hara. We have to view the universe through the lens of emes and sheker. So we're forced to conclude that tov in the first chapter has a different meaning. The Rav, if you take a look over here, writes that it's a homonym. And the question I'll leave you with, which maybe we'll pick up with next week, is the following. Is it problematic that the same word would have two totally different meanings, especially here, they're in such close proximity? The Rambam clearly thinks it's not a problem, but it's not just that the Rambam thinks it's not a problem. The Rambam thinks that this realization that words have multiple meanings, and especially within the discussion of creation, is at the root of correctly reading Parshas Bereishis. Let's think of a couple of examples. The word Eretz is used a couple of times in the first chapter. Does it have the same meaning? The Eretz Hayisasohu Vavohu. Does that mean, is that the same as Vayikra Layavasha Eretz? Does the word Rekia have the same meaning? This is both in the first chapter. What about the word Yom? Vayer Vayvoker Yom Echad. When we use the word Yom, mean a period of 24 hours, or at the very least, a period in which the earth rotates around the sun, or something like that. Is that what it means when the Pasuk says Yom Echad? Vayvayvoker Yom Echad. So the Rambam writes, and he notes, so you can take a look, see how many examples you think of this, you see, and if you want to take a look at Demar Nevuchim, especially Chelek Beis, Prakim Chavtes and Lamed over Shabbos, realizing that words have multiple meanings in these chapters is essential for understanding that. So we saw the example of Tov, maybe Rakia, maybe Yom, maybe Eretz. And if you understand that, and you appreciate that, then the Rambam writes, you'll be able to understand and address questions like the age of the universe and the like. But alas, we don't have time for that this week, maybe next week. We'll have to tie it into Parshas Noach, I suppose. So I want to wish you all a good Shabbos, and B'siyata D'Shemaya, we'll pick up next week.
Thank you, Rebbe.
Thank you. Good Shabbos.
Rebbe, good Shabbos.
Yeah. I have a quick question?
Sure.
I was just wondering, regarding Rebbe's last question, if it'd be possible to say that Tov, meaning there are very similar definitions when we use Tov and when HaKadosh Baruch Hu uses Tov, and that may be due to our differing in perspectives, meaning from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's perspective, Tov is a more objective, has a more objective meaning, and from our, by definition, subjective perspective, Tov must mean something different. But okay. Along the lines.
So I think you're right. In other words, what you're pointing out is two things, and they're both correct, but it still begs the question to some degree. Number one is you're saying that when we say a word has two different meanings, clearly they share a certain common denominator. It's not like the two meanings are unrelated. They just have two different definitions.
Right.
So that's point one, which you're saying, which is certainly correct. Otherwise, you wouldn't use the same word to refer to two different things. But that doesn't mean that they don't have two different definitions. There are two different definitions. It's just that there's something that those two definitions share, which is why the word has two meanings.
Right.
That's number one. And number two is then you're presenting a resolution, which is the initial definition relates to God's perspective. And that's why it's presented in the first chapter, which is creation from the perspective of God. And then the second meaning of the word emerges in the second creation narrative in chapters 2 and 3, which focus on man's perspective. And that is the basis of this different definition. I think that makes a lot of sense. If you take a look at the next source in the sheets, well, maybe we'll see this next week, but the Rav writes this point over here, again, continuing from where he left off before. The terms Tov V'Ra constitute homonyms in Hebrew, having both ethical and aesthetic connotations. On the one hand, Tov means the ethically good and right. La'asos ha-tov ha-yashar b'nei Hashem. And we, in fact, call HaKadosh Baruch Hu Tov. Tov Hashem la'kol. On the other hand, it signifies the handsome, the good-looking, and the pleasing. And you see this in a number of places, not just in Perek Gimel, but in numerous other places that the Rambam points out. Rambam translates the words Tov V'Ra, the story of the original fall, as meaning the pleasant and the unpleasant, the comfortable and the uncomfortable, the delightful and the ugly. So what the Rav is saying is like you're noting, that they are two different words. They're really two different meanings. There's a big difference between handsome and morally correct, but they share something, and that's why they share the same word. And that's, generally speaking, the Rambam's theory in through dozens of chapters at the beginning of Ranavuchim, how one word could have multiple meanings. The meanings are related, but they are, in fact, different.
Great. Okay. Thank you very much, Eddie.
Yes. Ezra.
Have a wonderful Shabbos.
I guess a question, maybe a clarification on some of the previous questions about this idea of the when Adam Arishon had, it was only a Yetzer Hara from the outside, it was more external. I guess, is this different than, how is this different than nowadays, that isn't there this idea of Inayin Rov, Ve'aliv Chomed, that our desires seem to come from things that are external. Like, we wouldn't have them if it weren't for external things coming in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think you're right. In other words, but the Einayim are part of us. I mean, there are things that might stem from inside, but even among those things that stem from the outside, they are that those desires, exactly like the Ramban says, stem from, and the Ramban, that they stem from looking at the world from a particular perspective of Ratzon or Chayfetz or Tov V'Ra, as opposed to Emes V'Sheker. But what you're saying is, in other words, even if the Yetzer Hara is within us, it's motivated by that which we see, certainly. I don't know if I'm answering your question, but maybe that's because I don't fully understand your question.
As in, I guess, like, at the time of the Marishon, it was more, like, natural to think about the world in a way that, I guess, like, didn't have, like, he didn't naturally view things with, like, desires, but, like, we're kind of, like, hardwired for that, like, RA9 or
okay. Multiple. Yeah.
Is that the idea?
Yeah. I think that makes sense. Okay.
Go ahead. According to the Rambam and Mor Nevuchim, Mm-hmm. We're saying that the sin was that they started viewing things through an aesthetic lens as opposed to an MS Vesheker lens. That means mm-hmm. that man was created with the ability to view things in either lens, and the sin was that they chose to use the wrong lens. That's what we're saying?
That's what it seems to be. Yeah, I think that's what he's saying.
And what precipitated that sin? Nothing?
So the Rambam doesn't explain the explicitly. The Rambam in one line implies that it related to kavod, again, the Rav sort of says it's sort of a overemphasis of an overemphasis. The Rambam, one way or the other, doesn't as far as I know, answer that question. But it, let me see if I could find that line that I was thinking of. I'll try to let you know, but I think it's the Rambam doesn't really, as far as I know, as far as I could tell, spell out what would have caused that. But I thought, here it is. His lashon is, again, in translation, however he became greedy, followed his pleasures and imaginings, and ate, so it's not kavod, it's greedy, and ate that which had been forbidden to eat. He was deprived of everything that he had to eat, meanest kinds of food. So here the Rambam is sort of explaining why it's Mida Keneged Mida, but it sort of, again, he says that it was greedy. In other words, he wanted more. I suppose that means he wanted to be able to see something or experience something that he couldn't in the world of Emes V'Sheker, and that's, you know, that's where it came from.
And the result was that we lost the ability to see the world with the lens of Emes V'Sheker.
Yeah, or exclusively. It's not to say that we can't discern Emes and Sheker now. We still can.
But it also wasn't automatic before, because we had the ability to choose, and the sin that he chose.
Maybe the difference is what was natural.
See, now we have the natural thing is Tova Ra, and you have to work hard to get Emes V'Sheker. Mm-hmm. Before it was the other way around.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Status.
Yes. Brian. You're muted.
I was just waving good Shabbos. Good Shabbos.
Good Shabbos. Shkayach. Shkayach.